Tammy from Baltimore, who's and her topic is fanning the flame of desire. All right.
My name is Tammy and I'm an addict.
Tammy.
First, I want to thank God. And I want to thank Narcotics Anonymous for introducing me to a God of my understanding. And I want to thank this convention for their service. It takes a lot to put on a convention. And for inviting me, because the places I came from, I was never invited anywhere. And this is truly, truly an honor and a privilege. And I am so grateful to be clean and here in Ocean City, sharing my experience, strength, and hope. I never would have thought it. You know, back before Narcotics Anonymous, the only desire I had was to get one more, you know? I lived to use and used to live. And that took me many, many places. At first, it started out real fun, you know, party. And then somewhere along the line, I crossed the line. And it was no more fun. It became a means of survival. I'm from Baltimore. And I like to say, like, in the end for me, that it was, it only lasted like a year or so. But in the end for me, it was jails, institutions, and death. It was living in abandoned houses, shooting dope on a daily basis. The $300 tricks turned to $10 tricks. I was in and out of jail, and I lived that way for years. Like most people, you know, you go to Baltimore City Detention Center one time, you lace up and run when you get out of there, you know? But not me. It was three meals and a cot. It became real comfortable for me. I started using at a really young age, and I don't know. By the time I made it to Narcotics Anonymous, I was so beaten and so broken and so empty. But I had a desire. I heard about this new way of life, that I could stop using and lose the desire to use. And I wanted that. I wanted that, but on one side, I wasn't sure if it was for me. Because I was one of them addicts that was in and out of Narcotics Anonymous. And thank God for the members that stayed here and fanned my flame of desire, because I wouldn't be here today. And I'm talking from a new person to an old timer. Everybody gave me a little piece of hope. And, you know, when I first got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous, it was back in 1994, and I had 30 days, and I was at the World Convention in Baltimore City. And, boy, what an event. So if you're here for your first convention, welcome. You are in for a ride. Yes, we like to have fun in recovery.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. And hopefully your desire will get fanned here. So I'm going to back up a little bit. You know, I always like to share what it was like for me, because I think that you need to know my pain. Because I definitely didn't come in here looking like this, sounding like this, or feeling like this. When I came in here, I had cornrows in my hair, two teeth in my mouth. I didn't know if I wanted to be black, white, green, purple, yellow. I was whatever you told me I had to get one more. And it was just that simple. Long, long time ago, I lost Tammy. I didn't even know what color I liked. I didn't know what music I liked. I didn't know shit but where to cop. At the age of 14, I was pregnant. I had a baby every year after that till I was 19. So I was 19 years old with a dope habit, because at 16, I stuck my arm out for the first time and said, can I have some of that? You know, and I walked around all my childhood. I always wanted to be whatever you was, never satisfied with how I felt, what I was like in my skin, always wanting whatever you had, your color, hair, your eyes, your parents, your house, your car, whatever. Never satisfied with me. And I ran with that, because I thought the world owed me something. I thought it was because I came from a broken home. I had a right to do drugs. I had a right to drink. My mother don't want me. My father died when I was 12. My grandmother died when I was 11. I was an only child. I was a latchkey kid. And what did I draw to? The older crowd on the corner drinking 40s and smoking weed. And look, I didn't even like weed, but I still kept saying, give me some. I didn't like how goofy it made me feel. I didn't like any of it, but you were doing it, so I did it, because I wanted so bad to fit in, just to be a part of something. So I ran with that for like 20-some years. And at 19, I had four children and a dope habit and a man that beat the shit out of me on a daily basis. And I thought that was love. I thought, you know, the more you told me what I could and couldn't do, that meant you loved me. The more jealous you was, you were loving me. I was so sick and twisted in my thinking, in my reality, in the illusions that I lived in, that only thing I could do to make it feel better was shoot more dope. Or whatever else I could get. Because I am not just, I go from A to Z. Whatever you got, I want some. And, you know, so like I ran with that, and you know, what happens? I lost my children. I used to say, oh, they were in a better place. My mother's got them. They're better off without me. Whatever the disease let me think, or my thinking, or whatever it is, that could get me one more. You know, because if I started maybe taking responsibility for myself, I might stop using. So I never took responsibility. It was always someone else's fault. Well, my mother gave me up. Now she can raise mine. All that garbage that I fed myself. And so once the kids was gone, I was totally off the hook. It became a 24/7 job to use. I like to say, like, the last 2 years I used 24/7, but no, like the last 10. You know, ways and means to get more. Like I said, it was all glamorous in the beginning, you know, dancing and, you know, down on the block and got the heels, got the teeth, got looking pretty good, you know. Yeah, in the end, it wasn't looking too damn good or smelling too damn good, you know. But I keep that pain up front because I don't ever want to return to that. I don't ever want to feel that pain again. So I've been taught around here, like, don't forget your story, you know? And I got a story in Narcotics Anonymous, too, because I've managed to get a few days clean that's added up to a few years. And I'm so grateful for that, and I stay grateful. No matter what I go through in here, I do not use no matter what. And my tomorrows, you know, tomorrow I'll go see the kids, tomorrow I'll call, tomorrow, turned into years later. And them little babies turned into adults. And I used to come into Narcotics Anonymous and get like 30 days clean, and all of a sudden I need to be Mother of the Year, and, you know, and I was running on my desire to, like, be what everybody thought I was supposed to be, instead of what you all are trying to teach me, to work a program and become a member of Narcotics Anonymous and just sit still and don't use, you know. But I want to go from A to Z, never do any work. So I always came in here and I would sit in the back and I would pick everybody apart. Wasn't trying to fan anybody's flame of desire to stay clean. I wanted to see if your desire was to want me. You know, I looked around and said, he looks good. That's mine. I am claiming him. And it would be me and him against you all. We don't need your help anymore. We got this. And out the door we went. And on the corner I went to now support me and him. You know, because that's the kind of addict I am. So, like, in 2002, September 6, I woke up, and at that end, it was sitting in a bathroom for 2 hours, praying to a God that I thought hated me to let me just find a vein. Praying, can I just get well, because I got court this morning, and I think this time I'm going to show up, because I'm just done. I'm so tired. There was no more kids. There was no more family. There was nothing. but an empty, abandoned house. And me, who couldn't stand to even look at herself in the mirror. So I got well that morning, and for some reason, I had a desire to go to court. Never went to court before. I was one of the ones, catch me when you can. We ain't showing up for court today. So I went to court that morning, and I got some time. You know, the judge gave me like 6 months, and I had like two more cases, and, you know, and I got in jail. And I went to jail many times before. It was no big deal. Three meals in a cot. I can get with her, you know, whatever. Whatever takes me outside of me. No sense of self. But this time I went to court, and I went to jail. And I got in there, and I always go in with this tough girl mentality. I'm from East Side, you know, I'm a soldier. I take care of me. You don't know who you messing with, all that, you know, that we tell ourselves. Yeah, right. Really, I was a scared little girl putting on the mask and praying. God, I hope she don't want to screw me up, you know. And I found myself fighting over a tray of state food.
Wow.
Beans and rice and some bread. And I woke up, came to whatever it was, with COs all around me, put me on lock. I said, now I'm a real dumbass. I got locked up in jail. How in the hell you do that? You know, shit. So here I go, in solitary confinement for 30 days,
wow.
And I hit a bottom. I hit a place of desperation that I never knew, because there was no longer no one for me to get outside myself with. It was only me and a God that I thought hated me. And the only thing I had left to do was pray and say, God, please let me stop. And that's where it started. And like, I did my time and I got out and I ran my ass up in these rooms. And I got my ass off the back row and I got on the front row. And I started taking some suggestions. And I started letting you all fan my flame of desire to stay clean this time and to find a new way of life. Because I had to let them sugar daddies go. I had to let the ex, the boyfriend go. You know, the one who whipped my ass for 5 years that I thought was so much love. only to get some clarity and realize I was crazy. And you all taught me that. Like, I came in here and I said I needed some help, and thank God for the members that were still here that said, we got you, baby. And them loving hugs that let me know, no matter how many times I kept coming in and out of here, that I still had a seat here. And as long as I had a desire, I could stay here. Oh, God. Anyway, and that's where my journey started. And I just wanted to read something, because when I got this topic, of course, I'm taught that you always go to the literature, because the literature is our program. I'm just a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And this really stood out to me. We look for ways to help instead of judge. God, have I judged around here? And what I've learned from judging is that I walk in their shoes. So today I really try not to do that. Our task is to fan the flame of desire, not dampen it. Any addict who walks into a meeting, even a using addict, displays a level of willingness that cannot be discounted. While maintaining an emphasis on the importance of total abstinence, still using addicts are welcome into our meetings with special encouragement to keep coming back. Many recovering addicts do not have access to regular meetings because of incarceration, geography, physical disability, or employment. These addicts are members in every respect as long as they have the desire to stop using, and they are entitled to the same consideration and support as any other member. And what that tells me, I can't measure your desire. I can't. And what tells me what works for me may not work for you. Because I do 5 meetings a week and you do 1, that don't mean you got more. I got more recovery than you do. You know, and I love that third tradition. And I love when I'm asked to do a meeting on a topic because it always takes me to my literature. So, like, I began my journey around here, and, like, in the beginning for me, it was a desire to stop using. And then it became a desire for a new way of life. So I had to start taking some suggestions. I got with a sponsor, and she put me on some step work, and she, you know, started, like, pointing out some things to me, like, Tammy, you might want to wear another size bigger pants, because you, like, put some weight on, and, like, you need to, like, loosen up, button up. I thought that was my assets. Thank God for the steps and for women in here that can teach us how to be a woman. And that's why for this addict, I needed to get with the women because I was comfortable with the men. I could manipulate. I could do all that stuff. So I needed to get with the women so they could teach me how to become a woman because I was a little girl in a woman's body. I had no sense of self, no sense of respect. Not just for me, but not for you either. It was it was open season. Whatever I wanted, the self-centeredness. So, like, I came around and I started doing some work, and, like, I started taking some suggestions, and the first thing I needed to do was get a job. I came in here with a 6th grade education. You know, I never had any, like, my dreams were gone. I was like, what kind of job am I going to get? What kind of resume I got? Customer service? Like, what? Look, I can laugh about that shit today, but let me tell you, when I came in here, I was broken by that.
Yeah.
I wasn't just broken by the drugs. I was broken by the ways and means that I got more. You know, I convinced myself I was only selling what belonged to me. I was killing myself.
Yeah.
And that's why this time when I came into recovery, I realized I couldn't get recovery on my back. And I had to get up and stand up for something and sit through some fear and get a guide of my understanding and let some women love me and fan my flame of desire to become a better person. So I went out and I got that job, minimum wage job, you know. And we do what we got to do. Look, I did what I had to do. It was $10, you know. So now I come in here and I'm going to start, you know, like, my thinking is so distorted, right? Because out there I'm jumping in and out of strangers' cars doing whatever they tell me to do to get one more. But I come in here and all of a sudden I can't ask you for my number because you might help save my life.
Yeah.
Like, really? You know? Like, that just isn't logical. So I walked through fears and I started getting numbers and I got that sponsor and I started building a relationship and I picked up the phone. And I always had to get the sponsor before, right, that, like, did the dances, not that anything's wrong with all that, but I wanted the hip, cool sponsor, right? My first sponsor looked like a guy and she had 9 months clean. And guess what? Me and her ended up using together, you know, because I just wanted to be, I wanted to fit in. I had it twisted when I got here years ago. And this time when I got here, I had a desire to want to stop using. And the woman who I asked to sponsor me, someone said, she's got 15 years clean. She's active in our home group. She's still a part of this fellowship, and she loves the women. You might want to ask her to sponsor you. I didn't even know her name. I just walked up. I said, can I get your number? I called her that night. I said, can you sponsor me? You know, I was in such desperation. I was willing to do whatever you told me I needed to do. I was going to die. I wanted to die every day. I just didn't have the courage to lay down. Because the disease said, one more. One more. So, like, I came in and, you know, me and her started working together and I got some teeth.
Hey.
I like to smile, you know? And she noticed that I like to smile. And she said, look, first thing you need to do is go get you some teeth because you're walking around looking at the ground.
Yeah.
Because my self-esteem was so low.
Yeah.
She's like, we need you to like get some eye contact. And we need you to feel better about yourself. And that was like so far-fetched for me. I'll never get any, no, I'll be like this for, you know what? But soon as someone planted that seed and said, yes, you can, because we're going to help you. A dentist came in, someone knew someone. Look, people said, whatever you save, I'll match. People started donating, you know? And next thing I know, a month later, I had teeth. I was walking around here. Look, couldn't tell me nothing then. But that's some of the things that was like fanned in me, you know, the desires, the seeds that was planted, like that I could become a better person. I could become my true self, the self that God made, you know. We just need to get that disease under arrest. And so I came and I got that job. And you all kept telling me, keep coming back no matter what. So every morning when I got up and my thinking said, call out. You want to go to camp noon. You want to go to that noon meeting. You want to hang out with the girls today. You don't need to go to work. You know, because that's how it talks. And it's in my voice. But something else said in my gut that God, you know, because that's where I believe, like, my instincts. God always leads me. Sometimes I just turn a deaf ear to it. Said, you better go to work, because you know if you ain't got your rent money, who you calling? So I would go to work, and I would pay my rent. And that made me feel better. That made me feel good about myself. And like from showing up for work every day and all that, and I got better jobs. And I remember I was working at this sub shop, and this woman came in and said, "You show up for work every day with a smile on your face. That man's cussing you out, and you're just grinning." She didn't know I'd just gotten teeth, and you know, and like. I wasn't shooting dope anymore, and I wasn't, you know, she didn't know all that. But I was becoming a productive member, right? And she said, I want you to come up to my office, and I want you to fill out an application. I want you to be a receptionist at our company. And long story short, I went and I filled out that application because you all told me I could. You all told me I'll help you. You all fanned the flame of my desire to become more productive and to raise the bar. And I went there, and I ended up running that whole company. And I ended up going to another company and building a company. Wow. Because I keep coming back, and I don't use no matter what. And no matter what that disease tells me, I tell you all what I'm thinking and how I'm feeling. Rather, if it's my sponsor or my support network. Sponsorship has been an awesome gift around here for me. It fans my flame, and it lets me know you're not alone, and I keep coming back. I'm going to read one more thing. I got 5 minutes, so I'm going to read this real quick. This is one of my favorite. I hope I don't cry, because I'm a crier, too. I found that out. And I like to laugh a lot and have fun. And I love helping women. I love helping women in this process. What an awesome gift. January 25th, an added gift. We see it happening among us every day. The miraculous turnabout is evidence of a spiritual awakening. Basic text, page 51. We watch them walk into their first meeting, defeated, their spirits broken. Their suffering is obvious, and their desire for help even more apparent. They collected a welcome chip and go back to their seats, shaken by the efforts. That was me. We see them again, and they seem a little more comfortable. They've found a sponsor and are attending meetings every night. They still won't meet our glance, but they nod their heads in recognition as we share. We notice a spark of hope in their eyes, and they smile uncertainly when we encourage them to keep coming back. A few months later, they are standing straight. They've learned how to make eye contact, They're working the steps with their sponsor and are healing as a result. We listen to them, sharing in meetings. We stack chairs with them afterwards. A few years later, they are speaking at a convention workshop. They've got a wonderful, humorous personality. They smile when they see us, they hug us, and they tell us they could never have done it without us. And they understand when we say, nor could we without you. I will find joy in witnessing the recovery of another. And that's my desire today. And you all will help me fan that this weekend, and I hope I help you. And let's party! All right.